course, KPFT, you're listening to. You are tuned into the monitor. My name is Mark Rabawi. My co-host is Emily Becker. And Robert Gardner is our engineer. We, of course, come to you every Monday at this time from the studios of KPFT in Houston. So Roy has been on the show before. If you go back to our archives, you'll see he was on the show in December of last year. He's a clinical psychologist. He's a president of his own consulting company. He mostly writes about the role of psychological issues in politics, organizational and group conflict settings. He's also the past president of Psychologist for Social Responsibility. And you co-authored this piece, Roy. We've got a link to it on our website at the LA Times, and it's titled How the American Psychological Association Lost Its Way. So people can go there and read it. But for people who haven't read it yet, first of all, what is the American Psychological Association, and how did they lose their way?
Okay. The American Psychological Association, or the APA, is the largest professional association of psychologists in the world. It has about 80,000 members. They're practitioners, they're teachers, they're researchers, and it's very big. It has a lot of influence on the profession, especially in the United States. The way it lost its way is it basically took a wrong turn after 9/11, a very serious wrong turn, and took steps to support the enhanced interrogation programs that the Bush administration had instituted. So rather than sticking to our ethics code and our do no harm principles, the leadership of the APA secretly colluded with the Department of Defense and the CIA to craft ethics policies that helped facilitate the tremendous harm that was inflicted on detainees at Guantanamo and elsewhere.
So I think, unfortunately, this view is still held by a sizable proportion of the population that somehow these so-called enhanced interrogation techniques, or torture, as I would call them, prevented terrorist attacks or provided useful intel somehow. What do you know about that side of it, and what is your main problem with the APA being involved in this, other than, you know, violating the do-no-harm policy?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there's basically no evidence to support the idea that torture works. If by what you mean by works, you know, produces actionable, useful intelligence. That's pretty much been disproven, including by the Senate report that was released last December about the CIA's use of torture. So it doesn't work. We've used it anyway. And the big problem with the APA is it's not something that psychologists or health professionals should be involved in. They shouldn't be involved in torture, but that's a kind of absurd bar to set as the standard. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be involved in abusing people. They shouldn't be involved in exploiting people or harming them in other ways. And yet, the APA leadership, seemingly in order to curry favor with the Pentagon, took a different path and decided that they would work, again, collude. So it wasn't as though everyone knew this was going on, but they would craft and revise their ethics policies in ways that didn't get in the way of psychologists participating in these interrogations. And it's a tremendous and horrific scandal for U.S. psychology, and I mean specifically for the APA, but psychologists in general are distraught about this.
And what do we know at this point about the APA's involvement in the techniques themselves? I mean, did they oversee anything? Did they help craft actual techniques? Did they advise? What do we know at this point?
There's no evidence that the APA leadership or the APA as an organization was involved in crafting the abusive interrogation techniques, but we do know that APA members were involved, were actively involved in that, both at CIA black sites and at Guantanamo, and we know that the APA never did anything about that.
So the professional association had members, are they in leadership positions or are they lower down? And these people were actually at interrogations.
That's right. No, they weren't leaders of the association. The most famous would be James Mitchell, mm-hmm. or infamous. So he was the one who developed the CIA's torture techniques, the waterboarding, and other such things. And he was an APA member at the time he did that. The APA, for years, denied that James Mitchell was an APA member. It's only 6 months ago that they finally admitted that he had been an APA member at the time that he was developing torture, and not just developing, he was participating in the torture at the black sites. And there are other psychologists who were APA members at the time that they were involved in abuse and torture at, for example, Guantanamo Bay. Ethics complaints were filed against some of these members, and the APA Ethics Office never took action. And in fact, so far, and there may be more, the only person who was fired as a result of this new report, which I should describe a little, is the former Ethics Office Director.
The new report, you mean the executive summary of the Senate Intelligence Committee?
No, a new report came out in July, okay. About 3 weeks ago. This is called the Hoffman Report. After the Senate report came out last December, the APA responded to that news and to a book by James Risen, mm-hmm. that suggested APA complicity in torture by hiring someone, an attorney, David Hoffman, former federal prosecutor, to conduct an independent review of APA over the past decade or so. He completed a 7-month review that involved interviewing about 200 people. I think there are about 50,000 documents that he reviewed. And that report came out just a few weeks ago and demonstrates clearly that APA leadership was complicit in supporting the Department of Defense and CIA efforts at interrogation.
Well, one of the things that James Risen wrote in his book, I've spoken to him, he's going to be on the show, I think, at some point in the near future. One of the things he says that the Bush administration worked with the APA in order to, quote, that this was, quote, an effort by the Bush administration to gain legitimacy for their process through the APA. So the APA, according to James Risen, cooperated not just because a few psychologists like Mitchell and Jensen, who we mentioned the last time you were on, were involved. Instead, the critics are saying that the psychological profession cooperated because it had so much at stake in the relationship with government and national security apparatus. So, yeah. I mean, there's a real ethical conflict of interest, as far as I can tell here. If you're a professional psychologist or a psychiatrist or a doctor or, you know, whatever, your interest is supposed to be the individual you're treating.
Absolutely. And what happened here is, it's important to recognize the Department of Defense is, and also the Veterans Administration, is a huge employer of psychologists.
Right.
And the APA, part of what it does is promote the work of psychologists. And basically, this is a clear case where they overreached, where they should not have been so ambitious or so eager to find new avenues for psychologists to work in, or and in addition, research. A lot of the research funding, not just for psychology, but for, you know, all the sciences, the social sciences, at this point comes from the government, and a lot of that is from the Department of Defense.
And there's a lot of money involved, right? I mean, I came across the number at one point, but Mitchell and Jessen, these two guys who were involved in creating the torture techniques, they got pretty rich off of this.
They got rich. Their firm, Mitchell Jessen and Associates, was paid $81 million to manage the CIA torture program. Now, they didn't split that 50-50. That went to a lot of other people,
sure.
who were working for them, but a decent number of those other people were psychologists, and we don't know who they were.
Right.
They remain unnamed.
So, I mean, I guess your perspective here is that the APA has taken an ethical and reputational hit. How does the APA recover from this in your mind?
Well, I think it'll be a multi-step process if it happens.
If they're even motivated to do so, apparently.
I mean, well,
they haven't tried to do much about it yet.
Well, there's some efforts underway. So, for example, the ethics office director was fired. The CEO and deputy CEO are retiring early. The communications director has resigned and is leaving, I think, within just a couple of weeks. So a few of the very top people will no longer be involved. But there are others who were implicated in this new report, the Hoffman Report, who remain in those positions. And even aside from those individuals, there's the bureaucracy and the way of doing business that still remains. Somehow, there's got to be an effort, a sincere effort, to figure out, for example, what should the APA's relationship to the military and intelligence establishment be?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what lines are fine, and what lines should the APA not cross? There's also got to be a review of the ethics policies. What is it okay for psychologists to do ethically in national security settings?
Yeah. I mean, I could think of a couple. I don't think anyone would object to the APA being involved with, rehabilitating veterans who've got PTSD.
Exactly.
But I think a lot of people would object to the APA helping craft torture programs. Those things seem pretty obvious to a layperson like myself.
That's a great start.
And that would be a good start. So does the APA have the power to do the equivalent of disbarring or censoring people or taking away licenses?
The APA has an ethics complaint process, which only applies to people who are members of the APA. However, the APA can recommend action against psychologists at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, every psychologist who works for the military has to hold a state license. So, if I had such a position, I live in Pennsylvania, I would have to be licensed by the State Board of Psychology. The APA could take action with the state board, encouraging it to take my license away if I had been engaged in some type of unethical activity. So the APA can do certain things with its members, but it is not powerless in dealing with psychologists who are not members.
Okay. Well, I think this is an important issue, not only within the medical profession, but it brings up the interplay and very mixed relationships that various professions have with government, with the Pentagon, and so on. It's just part of a wider picture. So I appreciate you being with us and giving us this update. I've got a link to your article that you co-authored. Can you tell me your co-author's name? Because I'm afraid I'm going to say it wrong.
Yes, Jean Maria Arrigo.
Okay. Jean Maria Arrigo and Roy Idleson's piece at the LA Times is linked from our website. Roy, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us. And I apologize for a slightly abbreviated interview because we have to raise some money.
Not a problem. Thanks very much, Mark.
All right. Thank
you. Have a good night.
You too. That was Roy Idleson. He's a clinical psychologist. You can read the report he co-authored with Jean Maria Arrigo. It's an op-ed at the LA Times. It's linked from our website.